making TV special.
Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means?
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
An Iowa company on Wednesday brought in a nationwide recall of its eggs to 380 million after some of its facilities were linked to an outbreak of salmonella that has sickened hundreds of people across the country. The outbreak, which federal officials said was the largest of its type related to eggs in years, began in May, just weeks before new government safety rules went into effect that were intended to greatly reduce the risk of salmonella in eggs. The company behind the recall, Wright County Egg of Galt, Iowa, is owned by Jack DeCoster, who has had run-ins with regulators over poor or unsafe working conditions, environmental violations, and the harassment of workers, as well as hiring of illegal immigrants.
Yes, yes, yes. That's the way we're going to start it, my friends. Welcome to this B-Side episode 183 for Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. And it's early in the morning on this August 27th, 2010, coming in to give you this B-Side when there's so much news, so much to go over. Of course, broadcasting live from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. Eggman, of course, Beastie Boys. And we're going to start it and flesh that story out a little bit from naturalnews.com. And this is all posted up on foodworldorder.com, one of the sister sites in the Media Monarchy Kingdom. FDA uses massive egg recall to push for egg pasteurization. Amid the massive egg recall currently underway over potential salmonella poisoning, The FDA has been working hard to push its pasteurization agenda. The agency recently made an announcement recommending that all grocery stores and restaurants begin stocking pasteurized eggs instead of raw ones. According to the CDC, the number of salmonella cases being reported has been steadily increasing throughout the summer. Rather than the average 50 illnesses reported a week, June and July saw numbers as high as 200 a week, prompting a response from the FDA. However, in typical FDA fashion, the agency has decided to ignore the actual cause of illness and contamination. Filthy Industrialized Food Production Systems, Inc., and instead call for all eggs to be cooked before being sold to consumers. Other recent outbreak scares include both spinach and tomato recalls, and we have flashback links for you there on foodworldorder.com, after which the FDA made similar recommendations urging produce irradiation as the solution. But this philosophy fails to address the real problem with the current food system. The industrial food system is both unsustainable and unhealthy. Whether with animals or produce, the methods typically used to raise food commercially are toxic and unsanitary and are actually responsible for causing food contamination. Animals and produce that are raised organically and naturally, the way nature intended, do not become contaminated with salmonella. But none of this phases the nation's regulatory agencies, which continue to push for the killing of food rather than trying to clean up the system and fix the problem at the source. We do have one related update from the Barf blog. Salmonella on crate washing equipment found in Roseburg, Oregon, at a dairy there. 23 are sick. And there is one comment to this posting basically saying none of this is true. Organic eggs can get salmonella as well. You decide. Our next post comes from Food Freedom. GMO crop sabotage on the rise, and the latest case is French citizens destroying a trial vineyard. Early Sunday morning, this past Sunday, August 22nd, French police stood helpless as 60 people locked inside an open-air field of genetically modified grapevines uprooted all the plants. In Spain last month, dozens of people destroyed two GMO fields. And back on the millennial cusp, Indian farmers burned BT cotton in their Cremate Monsanto campaign. Ignored by multinational corporations and corrupt policymakers, citizens act to protect the food supply and the planet. The French vineyard is the same field attack last year when the plants were only cut, but the security features installed after that incident kept authorities at bay while the group accomplished its mission. Speaking for the group, Olivier Florent told Le Figaro that they condemn the use of public funds for open field testing of GMOs, quote, that we do not want. Pitching tents in the rain near France's National Institute for Agronomic Research, INRA, in Colmar the night before, they waited until 5 in the morning before converging on the site and locking the gates behind them. They then uprooted all 70 plants and submitted to arrest. This is the second attack on GMO crops to make international news this year. In July, dozens of people destroyed two experimental corn crops in Spain. In an anonymous press release, they wrote, quote, this kind of direct action is the best way to respond to the fait accompli policy through which the Generalitariat, the state, and the biotech multinationals have been unilaterally imposing genetically modified organisms. More links in there for you to the flashbacks from The Guardian and Le Figaro and that aforementioned press release, also some from CNN. But did you catch that? The security features installed after the previous incident kept authorities at bay while the group accomplished its mission, using the system against itself. Thirdly, on foodworldorder.com, coming from the Health Day blog on usnews.com, surprise, surprise, bottled teas may not deliver on antioxidants. When you buy a bottle of tea, you may not be getting the health boost you expect. A new study finds that these increasingly popular beverages may contain far lower levels of antioxidants called polyphenols than green or black tea that you just brew at home yourself. Imagine that. In fact, some commercial tea beverages contain small amounts of polyphenols, such small amounts of polyphenols that you'd have to drink 20 bottles to get an amount equal to what's in one cup of homebrewed tea. Polyphenols are believed by scientists to have anti-cancer, anti-inflammatory, and anti-diabetic properties. Quote, consumers understand very well the concept of the health benefits from drinking tea or consuming other tea products. Researcher Shiming Li said in an American Chemical Society news release, of course, with a link for you. However, there's a huge gap between the perception that tea consumption is healthy and the actual amount of healthful nutrients, polyphenols, found in bottled tea beverages. Our analysis of tea beverages found that the polyphenol content is extremely low. And you can just hit Wikipedia with a link to read more about polyphenols, and there's also more from the CBC. Finally, on foodworldorder.com this week, it's the binge and purge list of headlines, bypass filthy inflation. And we're going to start off with foodsafetynews.com. Yet again, Obama recess appoints Dr. Elizabeth Hagen to USDA post. Again, the Obamasiah bypasses Congress, announcing August 19th his intent to circumvent the Senate and recess appoint Dr. Elizabeth Hagen, H-A-G-E-N, to be Undersecretary for Food Safety at the USDA, a post charged with overseeing the safety of approximately 20% of the food supply. To the dismay of food safety advocates, the top food safety post, which regulates meat, poultry, and processed egg products, has remained without a confirmed leader since December 08. And we do have one flashback over to MediaMonarchy.com. Decider-in-Chief bypasses Congress, then visits his Afghan surge. That takes us back to March of this year, where the Obamasiah bypassed Senate and installed 15 appointees. We also have more from foodsafetynews.com, an open letter to Dr. Hagen, and I haven't had too much time to try and research or dive in to her background. Hopefully, it's good and it's clean, and there aren't connections to Big Pharma or Monsanto or the Council on Foreign Relations. But I'd be surprised if there weren't. Obama dines at critically filthy Miami restaurant, again returning to, again, just constantly amazing new websites all around. Barf blog. Obama dines at critically filthy Miami restaurant. Obama got a sandwich at Jerry's Famous Deli in Miami last week, which was slapped with 26 violations for all types of uncleanliness by a state inspector on Monday. That would be a couple days after Obama went there. Jamie Oliver's Food Revolution won a Creative Arts Emmy, and again from foodsafetynews.com. The flashback tells the story and why I find that important. Going back to, again to March of this year on foodworldorder.com. Food Revolution off to contentious and hopeful start in Huntington, West Virginia. Yes, my home state is West Virginia. I've been in Oregon for about 5 years. But the further away I get, the more I find myself trying to be a cheerleader for my home state. And hopefully this will make good things happen. USDA lowers their 2010 food inflation forecast. More on that from MarketWatch.com. But yeah, they're saying, oh, food prices are going down. It's going to be fine. So we'll believe it when we see it. But apparently, you know, the war in Iraq is over. The oil spill is gone. And bread is going to cost a nickel. The last note from the Associated Press, judge recommends $12 million settlement on bad peanuts. And there you have it. Bad nuts, my friends, is the way we'll wrap up all the latest updates on foodworldorder.com for this week. What we're going to hit next is all the related alternative news, alternative media that I'm proud enough to be connected to or associated with in some way, shape, or form. Off the top, the latest episode of The New World Next Week, my weekly video series with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. We now have NewWorldNextWeek.com. You can get the high-quality downloads of those episodes. They look good. You can burn them off on DVD. They look great on television. I've experimented with it. And you can subscribe. Again, NewWorldNextWeek.com. The latest episode, Google in Court, Scanners on Trial, and Bye-Bye Cable. We are going to hit all of these stories in the remaining time here on this B-side episode 183. So again, that's there. Again, hat tip to CorbettReport.com for all the amazing work. Latest episode 143, more truth music. This would be a sequel to, I believe, episode 72 of Corbett Report, about truth music, people spreading political truths through musical arts, hip-hop, folk rock, mainstream. Truth is spreading in ways that few would expect. It was a great episode. Heard some great music in there. Actually turned me on to a band I knew, but a track I didn't know. But we're going to hear that at the top of the upcoming episode 184. We mentioned on the latest episode of New World Next Week all the great interviews that James is doing. He's on a hiatus for a week, so no new episode this coming Sunday, but coming back September 5th, there's going to be a massive 9th anniversary of the catalyzing catastrophic events of 9/11. James is going to have a massive show. It's going to be probably a couple hours long, and he's already collected up tons of interviews, and you can already sneak preview what's going to be in the show by checking out the interviews tab with Richard Gage and Bob Bowman and tons more. And of course, he does the Sunday update, covering most recently the Ground Zero mosque distraction, the Israel lobby, Apple, and Orwell. And yes, we're going to cover all those things and more still yet to come. We also have the latest episode from PeaceRevolution.org. It's episode 6, and it's called The Intellectual Elite Versus You, The Resurrection of Critical Thinking. PeaceRevolution.org is, of course, the new podcast from the folks that brought you 9/11 Synchronicity. It's Richard Grove, TragedyAndHope.com. This new episode, and again, when I post up episodes from Corbett Report or from Alex Ansary or from Peace Revolution or from Clyde Lewis, I try and give you the download links, the subscription links, and lay it all out there for you. This new episode has a lot of raw audio from the making of Believers Beware. That would be the new documentary upcoming from Paul Verge. You may remember that name. 2020 Hindsight, Censorship on the Front Line. That was the exclusive DVD that Richard Grove and Paul Verge and TragedyAndHope.com, PeaceRevolution.org. We were able to distribute that to you. If you donate $10, I still have probably 10 or so. It's getting down there. But let's take a little sneak peek of the upcoming documentary from Paul Verge, Believers Beware.
Want to learn how science is finally proving the existence of consciousness?
Well, I mean, the simple fact of it is that all matter is energy condensed to a slow vibration, and that every different element of matter, if you want to call it that, has a different vibration. And we as human beings embody many of these elements and different pieces of matter. And so each human being has a unique vibration and a unique frequency. Well, when this was discovered in the early 1900s to mid-1900s by people like Royal Raymond Wright, Nikola Tesla, they were discovering the vibratory nature of our physical reality. And they said, wow, the liver has a frequency, and when it's off the frequency, it gets dis-ease. But if we can put the liver back on frequency, it's healthy. It's heal thyself. Right? So it's all about knowing thyself and knowing what vibration you're supposed to be on. And every piece of propaganda, every piece of corporate news tries to affect our vibration. They do this very manipulatively, overtly and covertly, in Hollywood and in newscasts.
The world continues to awaken.
I mean, I started We Are Change 2.5 years ago, not expecting it to even grow out of New York. We have 130 chapters as of right now all over the world of people just taking this idea and going with it everywhere. Ireland, England, Germany, Switzerland, Greece, Canada, all throughout the United States, all over the world, people are waking up and taking back their humanity. And that's the most important thing in this life, is being able to be free, empowered, and being out there, being able to do what you want as long as you're not hurting somebody else. That's what life is really about.
There's so many things that are happening that are just, that need to be talked about and exposed. And, you know, I feel like I have this vehicle, so I might as well use it to, you know, to the advantage of just pushing knowledge forward. When there's such a void in that within the mainstream media.
Just a quick sneak preview of a quick sneak preview from the upcoming documentary Believers Beware. And in that short clip, we heard, of course, from Richard Grove and then Luke Radowski. And then at the end there was Remo Conscious, hip-hop artist. So again, episode 6 of PeaceRevolution.org, The Intellectual Elite Versus You. I also had a couple of updates that I may have mentioned on air, but had never put them on the site and added links and tried to get it out there. So here it is. Media Monarchy has been picked up by BeforeIt'sNews.com, and they're syndicating everything from Media Monarchy, Food World Order, and Cyberspace War. So huge thanks to those guys, and we have the link over to my, basically, publisher page. Also, a few months ago, I did an interview with some folks from Free Radio Olympia, frolympia.org. They made the trip down to Portland and interviewed myself as well as Tracy Twyman. So all that's up there. And again, put it on the record, I was remiss, but we got a lot of plates spinning, folks. While we're on Media Monarchy, we're going to get a couple of media-related things that, again, don't quite relate to our episode 184 coming up, which is essentially going to be massive, unbelievable police state updates and geopolitics. Unreal things going on. However, media and memes are my first love, I suppose you could say, but that's a bad way to intro this story that I did catch just in this small blurb form while I was flipping through the old gray lady, the New York Times, while on work break. String of deaths at rock concerts recently. The lead singer of a British pop band died Friday after jumping from a telecommunications tower at a Belgian festival. This incident, as we're talking about string of deaths at rock concerts, this incident followed others earlier in the week where concertgoers jumped from great heights and were killed or injured. The Guardian reported that Charles Haddon, the 22-year-old singer of Ue Le Swimming Pool, where is the swimming pool? An electropop trio from London, died at the Puckle Pop Festival in Belgium in a jump that followed his band's performance that night. A statement by the festival said that Mr. Haddon had decided to take his own life, adding, "Our thoughts and sympathies go out to his family and friends." Last Wednesday, that would now be two Wednesdays ago, I believe, a man at a Phish concert in Wantagh, New York, jumped from the balcony at the Nikon at the Jones Beach Theater and sustained injuries. The following night, a concertgoer at a performance by Swell Season, that's the Glenn Hansard band of The Frames in that film Once, I believe. A concertgoer at one of their shows jumped from the roof at the Mountain Winery in Saratoga, California, onto the stage and was killed. I dug up links to flesh out all of these stories that are, again, kind of bizarre that they happen in a string. We like to look at the clustering and the copycat effect of things. And again, we're not always ones to say, oh, everything's a conspiracy, but just sometimes you gotta say sinister forces. The last story on MediaMonarchy.com before we jump to cyberspace war for the rest of this episode is the story we covered on the latest NewWorldNextWeek.com. Pay TV subscriptions fall for the first time ever in the U.S. This from Investor's Business Daily. The number of subscribers to cable, satellite, and telecom TV services in the U.S. fell for the first time ever in the second quarter of 2010, according to research firm SNL Kagan. The U.S. multi-channel TV market lost 216,000 customers last quarter versus a gain of 378,000 a year ago. The total number of subscribers to cable, satellite, and telecom video fell to 100.1 million in the second quarter. Cable TV lost 711,000 subscribers last quarter. Now, what the analyst from SNL Kagan, Miriam Rondelli, says, quote, although it's tempting to point to over-the-top video as a potential culprit, we believe economic factors such as housing formation and a high unemployment rate contributed to subscriber declines in the second quarter. So essentially, people saying, oh, it's Netflix and DVDs and streaming and all that stuff that's killing it, right? No, it's also that people are being foreclosed upon while this controlled economic demolition happens around all our ears. Fascinating nonetheless, and the recurring theme of so much of this is that we basically need to take the production back into our own hands. Sounds very commie of me, doesn't it? Oh my god. Related update from activistpost.com, The Colony. And post-apocalyptic predictive programming for the whole damn family. The Colony, I believe, reality show that we have mentioned several months back on MediaMonarchy.com, but we don't have time for that. We're going to hop to CyberspaceWar.com, the other sister site in the Media Monarchy Kingdom, for the story you had to have heard about. This coming from NBCPhiladelphia.com. Philadelphia attempts $300 business privilege tax on bloggers, or as I coined, it's always money in Philadelphia. Taking a step closer to an eerie Orwellian state where creativity is crushed in the name of the greater good, the city of Philadelphia is demanding that bloggers pay $300 for the privilege of writing on the internet. This $300 business privilege license is for all local bloggers, even the ones who make no money. The city doesn't stop there. In addition to the $300 for the license to write on the web, bloggers must pay city wage taxes, business privilege taxes, and taxes on any net profits, on top of state and federal taxes, even if the blogger only made $11 over 2 years, this reporting citypaper.net. Blogger Marilyn Bess, whose Miss Philly organic blog has made her a whopping $50 over the past few years, went to the city's tax amnesty program to explain that she makes pennies on her hobby. They told her to hire an accountant. In an economy where jobs are sparse and people try to make ends meet with part-time jobs, taxing the independent, scrappy freelancers and bloggers seems counterproductive. But the emptying of bloggers' wallets may not be the worst result of these taxes. With the city's charge being more than what most bloggers make, their voices could be silenced, as the extra expense is enough to discourage many from even having a blog. To say that these kind of draconian measures are detrimental to the public discourse would be an understatement, writes the Washington Examiner's Mark Hemingway. So what's next? Higher taxes for longer blogs, cutting the use of vocabulary newspeak style? Oh, 1984, you still scare the shit out of us. That's going to be a theme that's going to pop up in episode 184 coming up. This Orwellian overlay becoming more and more apparent by the day, by the moment. We have a lot of links in this story, and again, this ties in with Internet 2, with a tiered system, with the end of net neutrality, with the Google-Verizon deal. They're going to try and shut the little guys out. So that's why we're doing all this, because while we still now have all these great tools at our disposal to say what we believe, say our truth, expressing our First Amendment rights, we're going to use these tools as long as we can. We've got a couple clips on this story. One I uploaded myself that I stole from, I believe, NBCPhiladelphia.com. And you can get that on YouTube.com/MediaMonarchy. So let's get more on Philadelphia attempting to collect a $300 business privilege tax on bloggers, or as I like, it's always money in Philadelphia.
Call it a blogging tax. Some website bloggers are being sent letters from the city of Philadelphia demanding $300 for a business privilege license. And needless to say, not many people are very happy about this. The mayor's press secretary's response is that Philadelphia has always had a business privilege tax, and anyone in the city who makes money has to pay for it. Joining us now is local food blogger Colin Flatt. Thanks for joining us, Colin. The city says basically if you have a business, you have to pay this $300, but most bloggers don't really make any money. They just do it as a hobby, right?
Absolutely. There are a few blogs that do turn a little bit of profit. The list of that is just much shorter than the list that do not turn for profit. And for those people that do make profit, there is definitely a reason to be paying for that tax. But this law kind of blankets everybody, whether you're doing it as a hobby or whether you're doing it for profit. Most of my friends that write about food the same way I do, we have actually a much bigger bill at the end of the month because we're spending more money so we can write about it, as opposed to those who do have blogs that are attached to more either mainstream media, magazines, or actually, you know, PR firms. We're not one of those people.
Right. So you actually buy the food, you eat in the restaurants, and then you blog about it. And you think putting this tax on bloggers is actually going to hurt the city of Philadelphia, because lots of bloggers say good things about what's happening in their communities, right?
Absolutely. What we're seeing with blogs being such an important media and such a vital part of the stimulus is that people see, okay, well, X blogger, I really respect what he writes, or I like the way he or she thinks, and someone says, go to this restaurant, try this place out that may not be one of the ones we all know about. It's easy to find a Jose Garces restaurant, a Steven Starr restaurant, but sometimes you find these other smaller businesses in the other neighborhoods, South Philly or, you know, Fishtown, that someone writes great things about, and it's stimulating the local economy because people are going and making destinations based on these bloggers' recommendations. Now, I think if you have this tax, you're going to have people saying, well, I don't know, do I fall under the guise of the $300 tax or not? You might be stopping somebody that would have started a blog that might end up bringing money back into the city.
Right, whether it's restaurants, whether it's fashion, food, wine, whatever. So is there a way around it?
It doesn't seem there's a way around it. I think what has to happen, and what happens with Philadelphia oftentimes, is they'll throw out a crazy law or tax or some kind of other issue that they end up, you know, throw it out to the public. The public freaks out, and they take a couple steps back. I think what we really need to worry about here is the use of common sense and discretion. And these are two traits that we don't always see when it involves Philadelphia and the infrastructure here. So hopefully they'll figure out, maybe there's a bar to set. If you make X amount of dollars this year, you have to pay X amount of dollars in tax, because that's not something they've already established. And people that are established bloggers now that do influence a lot of public opinion started out as small bloggers that had nothing to lose and just were doing it for fun. And we're ended up seeing now a lot of these people now are turning for profit and they're paying their BPL license fees. But, you know, we don't want to see people stop this creativity or actually stop launching things that might bring money back into Philadelphia without thinking about the long-term effects.
Well, are other cities doing this? I mean, this kind of just came out of the blue. I know a lot of people are talking about this, a lot of buzz on the internet about this.
I'm guessing we're probably the first, and the reason I say that is because when I first heard about it, it was written about in the New York Daily News, and if New York's writing about Philadelphia, chances are it hasn't happened in New York yet. So.
All right. Well, Colin, we really appreciate you joining us. We'll see what happens. We'll see if Philadelphia backpedals on this.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Now, as we said, the internet is buzzing with outrage. One site, for example, out of San Francisco, describes the move to charge bloggers who make money online as a, quote, ridiculous action, and elsewhere describes the whole thing as foolish. Mayor Nutter, well, he defends the policy. Listen.
If you're paying taxes to the federal government, you should be paying taxes to the city of Philadelphia, whether you're blogging or manufacturing or catering or whatever it is you're doing. This is about business. If you're in business, making money, then you should operate in accordance with every other business in the city of Philadelphia and get a business privilege license. If we had exceptions based on certain types of business, I think if you are a manufacturer, if you are a retailer, if you're someone who is playing by the rules, making money, paying taxes, and all of a sudden we're not requiring the same of all businesses across the board, you would be standing here, Bruce, asking me why is the city not enforcing its own regulations with regard to people filing taxes with the feds, paying their federal taxes, not paying them to the city.
A spokesman for the administration also points out that the bloggers appeared on their radar screen by identifying themselves as business people on those IRS forms. Doing so helped them get some federal tax breaks for business expenses. Now, says the spokesman, some of these very same folks want to suddenly claim blogging is a hobby.
But Bruce, what about the reception, perception here, the idea that even if these really are business people, they're the smallest of the small? What kind of message is that sending?
Well, probably not a good one. Yeah, guys like Proctor say, look, it's hard to take this stuff seriously. Look, I'll pay my fee, I'll pay my taxes, but it's hard to take this seriously when the city has got all of this waste and fraud and abuse at all levels. And hey, what about the big companies that are not paying their taxes? And the city says, yeah, that's right, but we're going after the big guys. They have the big attorneys who tend to stretch these fights out a lot longer. But because some folks are getting away with it, doesn't mean we shouldn't try to enforce it for as many people as we can. This debate's going to go on for a while, and because we're talking about bloggers, you can bet it's going to be all over the internet for quite a while.
That right there is a safe bet. Bruce Gordon reporting. Bruce, thank you.
Oh, it's going to be all over those silly internets. But yes, it is all about squeezing out the little guy on all levels, whether we're talking about farms or whether we're talking about the webs. So the second part of that clip was the update from MyFoxPhilly.com. Mayor Nutter defends business privilege tax on bloggers. As we continue our latest updates from cyberspacewar.com, we get this from the Washington Post. Defense official discloses cyber attack, or DOD and CFR versus USB. Now, it's official. The most significant breach of U.S. military computers was caused by a flash drive inserted into a U.S. military laptop on a post in the Middle East in 2008. In an article published Wednesday discussing the Pentagon's cyber strategy, Deputy Defense Secretary William J. Lynn III says malicious code placed on the drive by a foreign intelligence agency uploaded itself onto a network run by the U.S. Military Central Command. Quote, that code spread undetected on both classified and unclassified systems, establishing what amounted to a digital beachhead from which data could be transferred to servers under foreign control, end quote. Lynn writes in his article for Foreign Affairs. ForeignAffairs.com, of course, being one of the mouthpieces of the Council on Foreign Relations. Tragedy and hope, indeed. The interesting update to this story from Danger Room, insiders doubt hack was foreign spy attack. And this is why we started cyberspacewar.com. All these attacks, again, on inner space and outer space. Our next story we did cover on the latest episode of New World Next Week from ArsTechnica.com. Google WiSpy lawsuits head to court. Whether Google is liable for damages for secretly intercepting data on open Wi-Fi routers across the U.S. is to be aired out in a Silicon Valley federal court. 8 proposed class actions from across the country that seek unspecified monetary damages from Google were consolidated this week and transferred to U.S. District Judge James Ware in San Jose, California. Another 5 cases are likely to join those 8. The lawsuits allege Google violated federal and state privacy laws in collecting fragments of data from unencrypted wireless networks as its fleet of camera-equipped cars moseyed through neighborhoods snapping pictures for its Street View program. The deep-pocketed Google maintains that it did nothing wrong and is likely to put up a fierce and costly defense. Google, in response to government inquiries and lawsuits, claims it's lawful to use packet-sniffing tools readily available on the Internet to spy on and download payload data from others using the same open Wi-Fi access point. Don't be evil. We have more on this from Threat Level. But what fleshes this story out, and what we've discussed time and time again, is the fallacy of Google's "don't be evil" motto.
The Internet as we know it is in the process of being dismantled. It's known as Internet 2. More than a decade ago, a consortium of top tech companies, along with universities and government, began meeting once a year. And they openly said that they would expand the Internet, get everyone addicted to using it, and as soon as society was completely reliant on it, they would unveil the fact that it was really a DARPA surveillance control grid to track and trace all human activity. They were really smart. They give you Google Earth satellite system so that everyone gets accustomed on spying on each other. And now the government is using it to harass farmers, to go after people building a shed in their backyard when it violates zoning laws, or to stop people from collecting rainwater.
Your name is Tom. You live just off of Fifth Street. Nice car, Tom. Nice house. What's not so nice is you owe Pennsylvania $4,212 in back taxes.
They come out and said Google was founded with NSA and CIA money, but it's a lot worse than that. Google has been caught in the United States, Canada, Europe, Asia, driving around, not just taking photos and video for Google Street View, that's just the cover, but with electronic masks illegally violating wiretapping laws, grabbing everyone's wireless data and decoding it. This is a private mercenary army. Just like there's more Blackwater and DynCorp contractors in Iraq and Afghanistan than there are U.S. troops, Google is the quasi-private, quasi-governmental arm of this. Yahoo is to a certain extent and others, but Google from its inception with NQTEL, CIA funding, is nothing but a government system to take over the internet and to steer and control the architecture of the growth and future growth of the web.
And there you have it. That's, of course, Alex Jones from Infowars.com on a video about Google and its takeover plans. I would say they're pretty transparent, but again, most folks don't know about the intelligence connections that are replete with not only Google, but of course, Facebook and all the others. Our next story on cyberspacewar.com comes from dvice.com. Childless UK couple build robot child companion. Meet Amec, A-I-M-E-C. The creation of Tony and Judy Ellis, a robot-building couple from Southeast England. Amec follows them around their 18th-century country home, cracking jokes, laughing, searching online for interesting things to tell its parents, just like a real kid. Amec is also adept at imitating vintage robot voices and is said to do a mean C-3PO. It even snores when you put it to sleep and wakes up with a little stretch. The couple runs a robotics company called Conceptioneering out of their house and made their fortune with a game called Cube World. Tony expects Amec could be on the market within a year or two, selling for an impossibly low-sounding $300. More on that from the Daily Mail and GizmoWatch.com. AI indeed. All our sci-fi fantasies are coming true, aren't they? Our last post on cyberspacewar.com is an ugly list of headlines. We call it DEFCON, Dirty Tricks and Moon Rocks. U.S. military's top secret X-37B shuttle, which you may recall we reported to you back in April on Cyberspace War. Well, apparently it disappeared for 2 weeks and then changed its orbit. And we have more on this from Cryptogon.com, and there's even a fascinating real-time track of this X-37B spy plane, which if we hop over to Anti-Fascist Calling, Tom Burkhart, on his Space War update, secretive mini-shuttles, dirty tricks, spy sats, and much, much more, going into the X-37B, the National Reconnaissance Office, all that and so much more. Weaponizing space. It essentially, as folks have speculated about this X-37B, is it's setting up satellite pinpoints. That's my dummy way of putting it. The only thing we're going to mention about this, here it is from Of Goats and Men. Sweden pulled WikiLeaks warrant. I'm sure you heard about Julian Assange being first accused of rape, and then less than 24 hours, it was rescinded. Is this dirty tricks from the West against WikiLeaks? As we've covered the Afghan war diaries, things started to smell a lot funnier. Of course, as so many of these documents now just seem to point for more war and wider war in Pakistan and Yemen on the global war of terror. But another story that we reported to you back in March of this year on cyberspacewar.com, where an Austin hacker disabled more than 100 cars remotely. We do have an update on this story from ABC News. Scientists hack into cars' computers and control brakes and engines. We'll get a little bit of that with a little bit of flashback from the Austin hacker as well.
A man fired by a Texas auto dealership used the internet to get revenge. Omar Ramos Lopez is accused of using a former coworker's password to disable ignitions and set off car horns on more than 100 cars sold by the auto center. Police say he's charged with breach of computer security, which is a felony, and if he's convicted, Ramos Lopez faces up to 10 years in prison.
It sounds like a Hollywood movie. Cyber criminals in a van use a laptop to hack wirelessly into computer-controlled systems. But then guys from Rutgers did it. So which came first, the hacker or the eggheads? Click to Houston.com. I subscribe to their News of the Weird. Missing moon rock unveiled in Colorado. And our final note on cyberspacewar.com, as well as this episode 183B from MediaMonarchy.com, we're going to tie in several things. We get this from Grant Lawrence, not blogspot.com, where physicist Michio Kaku says that UFOs are real on MSNBC's Dylan Radigan show. You may recall Michio Kaku because we just mentioned him last week when he was talking about solar storms, CMEs, could set us back 100 years. And again, those are the kind of things that we're tracking on cyberspacewar.com. EMPs, CMEs, space war, solar storms, all those things seem to be on the horizon, both literally and figuratively, and on the predictive programming scheme. And that's what we want to tie in. The last bit of alternative media I did mention when we were going over CorbettReport.com and PeaceRevolution.org is the latest episode from my man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org. It's called The Alien Kill Switch. Now, his latest episode, of course, broadcast live on KUFO 101.1 FM here in Portland, Oregon, rebroadcast live around the world from ZeroPointRadio.com, and that is where you can go and get the download of that episode, and you can subscribe. And again, we please ask you to donate to ZeroPointRadio.com and GroundZeroMedia.org. Again, if you find this information useful, please donate. We're all independent. God knows when the blogger tax is going to come hit more of us. But one, the amazing Heinrich and the gang at redicecreations.com, they've posted links to some of my stories from time to time, and I always find out by looking at my site stats and when I see a massive spike, like I saw just a couple of days ago. So thanks to Heinrich and those guys at redicecreations.com for posting a link to my post about Clyde Lewis's episode, The Alien Kill Switch. This, of course, is the perfect preface for tonight's show, Plan 10, from Clyde Lewis and GroundZeroMedia.org. A live presentation tonight, the last Friday of every month, Clyde Lewis at the Kenton Masonic Lodge in Portland, Oregon, does a live show. If you're not in Portland, Oregon, you can listen on ZeroPointRadio.com. You can purchase tickets for your audio seat. And all of these things connect. I guess I've been on a little bit of a sci-fi kick lately, watching Body Snatchers and Alien Trespasses and X-Files and beyond. But it's there, and it's in the zeitgeist. They are prepping us for more disclosure, it seems. So, I'm going to be at Plan 10 tonight at the Kenton Masonic Lodge with my man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org. So the way we're going to go out is Michio Kaku talking aliens on MSNBC. So, my friends, this is going to be the end of episode 183, the B-side. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, as well as FoodWorldOrder.com and CyberspaceWar.com, reminding you, don't hate the media. Become the media. Take care.
UFO believers, listen up. You may well be vindicated. We are back with an out-of-this-world town square and a new book out later this week. Government officials, pilots, and scientists going on the record about their own close encounters. Michio Kaku, professor of physics at CUNY University and host of Sci-Fi Science on the Science Channel, got to read the book early, and he joins us with a review. Quite simply, Professor, do unidentified flying objects without question exist?
95% of all UFO sightings can be immediately identified as the planet Venus, weather balloons, weather anomalies, swamp gas, you name it, we got it nailed. It's the 5% that give you the willies. 5% remain totally unexplained.
And you're saying to 5% unexplained to the point where they are legitimately an unidentified flying object.
And we're talking about generals. We're talking about Air Force pilots. We're talking about governors of states that claim that, hey, this is beyond our understanding of the laws of physics.
Can I have an unidentified flying object that is not necessarily from some other place?
It's possible, but we've looked at all the alternatives. These are multiple sightings by multiple modes. In other words, pilots, eyewitnesses, radar, visual sightings. These are very hard to dismiss, the handful of sightings. One over Alaska, another over Belgium, another over Iran. The handful of things that still cannot be explained defy known laws of physics.
So then, by that definition, does this confirm the existence of life on other planets, in your opinion?
I wouldn't go that far. We need alien DNA or an alien chip. That would nail it to the wall right there. We don't have that. We don't have the smoking gun. But this book is as close as you're going to get to the smoking gun. We're talking about senior military officials who were involved in the investigations of these incidents saying we are clueless.
If you were to look at those who argue, well, hang on, there's no way that they could get here from some other planet, that that the technology doesn't exist, the stars are too far away, you rebut that sort of thinking with what?
Those people assume that they may be 100 years ahead of us, in which case it's impossible for them to reach us. But if they're 1,000, 1,000,000 years ahead of us, then new laws of physics begin to open up. So we have to open our mind to the possibility that they're not just a super version of us, that they could be thousands, millions of years more advanced.
Why would they not then pay us a visit in a way that is more recognizable? Go visit the White House, maybe stop out to Yellowstone.
My point of view is if you're walking on a country road in St. Anthill, you go down to the ants and say, I bring you trinkets, I bring you beads, I give you nuclear energy, or perhaps maybe you step on a few of them. If they're that advanced, maybe they simply are not that interested in us.
All right. Listen, Professor, it is an absolute pleasure. If we have any strange sightings, at least now I know who to call.
Mm-hmm.
Before I let you go, do you teach on this subject at the university? On UFOs
I mentioned it when I teach astronomy. Also on Sci-Fi Science, we have a whole episode about what kinds of physics could open up in the next million years.
That could let us travel a few million miles at a time.
New kinds of physics on the Science Channel.
Very cool. Listen, a pleasure.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Say about on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.